I want to talk about what I believe is going to be a prophetically significant year in 2016. I believe this for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that of the increased persecution that potentially awaits us as Christians in the coming year, should the Lord tarry. I'm of the belief that 2016 will be a defining year because of the greater intensity and frequency with which prophecy is now being fulfilled. It reminds me of what Jesus said. It's recorded in the book of Revelation. He said, "Behold, I come quickly." And that's an interesting word in the original language of the Greek New Testament. It's the word tachos in Greek, which is where we get our English word for tachometer. And a tachometer in our cars is a gauge that measures revolutions per minute, known as RPMs. What's interesting about that choice of word, when Jesus says, "Behold, I come quickly," what he's saying is, "Behold, I come at a time when things are revving up. The RPMs are going to be redlining." See, the time is already set. It's a gauge that measures not time, it's per minute. That's already set, but the revolutions per minute. "Behold, I come quickly." I come at a time when things are going to be revving up with greater intensity and greater frequency. Hear me out, and I really had to think through this and pray through this in how I would say this, but I would suggest that if what it looks like could happen actually does happen in the months that lie ahead, it's likely not going to bode well for some. And by that I mean some Christians may be completely blindsided and caught off guard, so much so that it may very well shake them in their faith. And maybe the jury is still out on what the shaking may accomplish, but for some, it may wake them up, but sadly for others, it may instead take them down. I think we've had it really good for a really long time here in the United States of America. We've taken for granted many things that as Christians we can enjoy, freedom being supreme among them. And as I see what is taking place in the world today, it's becoming quite clear that we've got some rough days ahead for us as Christians. We are living in a world, not our home, that is becoming increasingly hostile to Christians, and I'll add to that, Jews as well. And it's really chiefly at the hand of Muslims who are commanded in the Quran to terrorize and behead the people of the book, the Jews and the Christians. And that's why Christians in the Middle East, my countrymen, my Arab people, brothers and sisters, and they're your brothers and sisters in Christ, are being tortured at the hands of Muslims. They're being crucified. Again, the Quran commands the Muslim to crucify Christians, and they're being beheaded. Many children are beheaded in front of their parents. It's unthinkable, really. We here in America, though, and I don't mean this to beat up on anybody or be derogatory towards anybody, but I think you would have to agree that it's so far removed from us. It's not our daily portion. We, especially in Hawaii, living in what is called paradise on earth, and it is beautiful here, but it comes packaged with this subtle ability to lullaby us into a spiritual slumber. And we don't take seriously the times in which we live. And living here, I think, has sort of given way to that. And as one said this last couple of weeks, that he fears that many Christians in America are not prepared for what's coming. The casual Christian, the Christian that's playing church, the Christian that only goes to church and fellowships occasionally, reads the word rarely, prays even more rarely. How are they going to stand in the face of what is likely coming? I hope you know that I in no way wish to incite fear. God's not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind to make sound decisions. God's given us a profound intellect. But by virtue of the fact that so many Bible prophecies seem to have sped up in 2015, it would stand to reason that they may speed up even more in 2016. I mean, it would just seem reasonable to conclude that. And it's for this reason that I think I'd be grossly remiss were I not to sound a warning as a watchman. This is something that I obviously take very seriously. And one of the reasons I do is because I would much rather sound a warning and have nothing happen than not sound a warning only to have something happen. And keep in mind, I will have to give an account one day. I will have to give an account one day when I'm standing before my God. And I will have to give an account for what I did with that which he called me to. Ezekiel, the 33rd chapter, I want to read verses 1 through 9, is why I say this, really. And why I do this. And why since the year 2006, we're entering into 10 years now that we've been doing these prophecy updates on a weekly basis. Says again, the word of the Lord came to me saying, Son of man, speak to the children of your people and say to them, when I bring the sword upon a land and the people of the land take a man from their territory and make him their watchman, when he sees the sword coming upon the land, if he blows the trumpet and warns the people, then whoever hears the sound of the trumpet and does not take warning, if the sword comes and takes him away, his blood shall be on his own head. He heard the sound of the trumpet, but did not take warning. His blood shall be upon himself. But he who takes warning will save his life. But if the watchman sees the sword coming and does not blow the trumpet, and the people are not warned, and the sword comes and takes any person from among them, he is taken away in his iniquity, but his blood, listen, I will require at the watchman's hand. So you, son of man, I have made you a watchman for the house of Israel. Therefore you shall hear a word from my mouth and warn them for me. When I say to the wicked, O wicked man, you shall surely die, and you do not speak to warn the wicked from his way, that wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood I will require at your hand. Nevertheless, if you warn the wicked to turn from his way, and he does not turn from his way, he shall die in his iniquity, but you have delivered your soul. I think of the Apostle Paul in the book of Acts, who said that I am free of the blood of any man. Why? Because I did not cease from giving you the whole counsel of God. The whole word of God. the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help me God. Oh, it might not make me popular. I won't have the biggest church on the island. By the way, I've had a big church. I love you, man. I love a small church. Big church equal big problems, believe me. When we came here, I prayed, Lord, let the church grow small. I had no idea that the Lord would answer that prayer by locally growing the church, adding to the church. We're relatively a small church, but He grew it small all over the world with an online church that I could have never imagined the Lord would ever do. And so He answered that prayer, and for that I am very grateful. And one of the reasons I prayed that was because I know to whom much has been given, much is required. What are you going to do with what I have given you to do, called you to do? It's interesting, the watchman would hear a word from the Lord about what was coming, and then he was to warn God's people about what was to come. His neck was on the line. That's kind of selfish of me, isn't it? I'm keeping, you know, trying to save my own neck. There, I warned you. I'm free of the blood of anyone because I did what I was supposed to do. Now it's up to you. Well, what are you saying, Pastor? What are you seeing? Oh, what's coming? I think suffice it to say, in 2016, my posture will continue to be that of blowing the trumpet to warn the people of that which I believe with all my heart is coming upon the land. I suppose the question does become, though, what exactly is coming? And I want you to think through this with me, but for the answer to that question, I think we need look no further than to how 2015 ended. And we did talk about this a little bit last week, but what follows this week in no specific order are just a few things. Time doesn't permit to address all of the things that I see coming, but just a few things that either started happening or are now happening as we start off the new year. And some of these things were taking place sort of below the radar while we were celebrating Christmas and New Year. First, the wheels are in motion by the U.S. president to unilaterally use executive powers to implement sweeping new gun laws, which experts believe will certainly violate the Second Amendment. This is huge. I think the president tomorrow, Monday, is going to meet with staff and start this process in motion. There's also the Islamic terrorism around the world that is unprecedented, I think you would agree, and it's the likes of which we've not seen in our lifetime. It almost seems as though Islam has been largely dormant in years past. And then it seems that the green light was given, and it was their belief, especially the belief of the Islamic State, that in order to fulfill Islamic prophecy, they had to establish a caliphate, Sharia law, in what they call the Levant, which is really the Promised Land, the original borders of the Promised Land. Add to that the recent wild and wacky weather across the globe, really sad, the flooding on the mainland. But I don't know if you heard about this, but there were numerous earthquakes in, of all places, California. Now, you see here pictured on the screen a chart that only goes through August of last year, and it was only the central U.S., but look at that increase in earthquake activity. If you go to the USGS site, they can't get away with it anymore. Years ago when I used to teach Matthew 24, which we'll look at here in a moment, I used to discourage people from relying on the USGS because they were publishing conflicting data. But as it turns out, the data is very clear. Earthquakes have increased exponentially. I mean, dramatically. Exactly as Jesus said they would, as a sign of the end of the age. It's in Matthew 24, verses 3 through 8. As I read this, and I know some, if not most of you are familiar with this, all of that discourse, this portion of it. But as I read it, view it through the lens of our world today as we step into and usher in this new year. As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. "Tell us," they said, "when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" Here's Jesus' answer. "Watch out that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name claiming I am the Messiah and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars." That could also be translated threats of wars. "But see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places." And verse 8 is key. He says, "All these are the beginning of birth pains." The King James translates it sorrows, but it's really in the original language, birth pains, which come in greater frequency and greater intensity. And all of these things that Jesus lists here will be like those birth pains in that they will increase as birth pains do, likening the return of the Lord to a baby being born. The baby is born when it comes more frequently and with greater intensity. Then there's the economic news, which by any stretch of the imagination is bleak at best, and it's evidenced by this Bloomberg Business article describing 2016 as the year that nothing worked. It's the year that stocks, bonds, and cash went nowhere. What an apt description of a very volatile year financially. On Thursday, the 31st, the last day of 2015, the Washington Post reported that U.S. stocks had their weakest year since 2008. Remember 2008? It was the weakest year since 2008 in 2015. And if this weren't bad enough, Market Watch published an article in which they reported that Wall Street's forecast for 2016 will be even worse than 2015. Happy New Year. You know what this tells me? That we do err greatly, especially as Christians, if we lay up for ourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust can destroy and where thief can break in and steal. Instead, we would do well to lay up for ourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust cannot destroy and thief cannot break in and steal. I believe that any Christian who is looking to their financial portfolio, looking to their financial strength, maybe their savings account, their retirement account, I have to say that you can't trust in that. You can't trust in that. Loosen your grip on that. It's okay to have it, but don't let it have you, and certainly don't let it have your trust. That is not what our trust is to be in. That is not what our hope is to be in. Well, that's just the economy. You'll forgive me, but I am not going to dive into the shark-infested waters of this year's election for a new president. I will say, and this is the only thing I'll say, is that if the Lord tarries, we're in for an electoral process that promises to be very, very interesting. But be that as it may, and by the way, this is the likes of which we've never seen before, too. It's almost humorous for me, and if anything, I enjoy watching the experts on these cable news channels trying to explain what's going on this time. They've never seen anything like it. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I'm trying not to get political here, but it is very interesting that we have playing out something that has never been seen before. And it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out in the weeks and months ahead. But let me hasten to say that all that as it is, while we were celebrating the holidays, there were significant developments concerning Israel, and it went largely unnoticed because of that, probably. On Friday, January 1st, the Times of Israel published a report titled, "Iran will make missiles for as long as U.S. supports Israel." Wait a minute. Call me silly, but I thought we had a nuclear deal with Iran. Oh, it gets worse. Quoting the article, the Revolutionary Guards had hit back at the U.S. threat of sanctions over weapons tests, saying that the regime has so many missiles it doesn't know where to put them. This was after, I don't know if you heard about this, while we're all celebrating, enjoying the holidays, Iran launched what one called a highly provocative rocket test last week that was close in proximity to U.S. warships and even commercial traffic passing through the Strait of Hormuz. There was no comment from the president. He was over here at MidPAC in Lanikai golfing. Oh, but did you see that 40-foot putt? That was pretty impressive, wasn't it? You'll forgive my cynicism, but that's shameful. Not a word. Iran does this, not a word. If anything, he walks back threats of new sanctions because of this. And you wonder why I'm warning you about what might come in 2016? Oh, Pastor, you're an alarmist. Fine! The alarm is sounding! Are you kidding me? Let me calm down and quote the rest of the article. General Hossein Salami, in a speech during Friday prayers in Tehran, said, quote, "We tell the Americans that we will further expedite enhancement of our missile capabilities as long as they," listen to this list of what we're doing, "massacre the Palestinian children, as long as they bury Yemen's oppressed children in their houses, as long as they displace the Muslim nation of Syria, as long as they attack the houses of the Pakistanis, as long," and this one gets me, "as they occupy the Islamic lands, and as long as they support the Zionist regime to bomb Lebanon, Palestine, and Syria." You'll never hear them even utter the word, the name Israel. It's not Israel. The very first time I went to Israel, 1994, what's that now, 20-some years ago, I came back and I was living on the mainland at the time, and I have a huge Arab family there, all of whom consider themselves to be Palestinians. And I shared with my cousin, man, Israel was great. And he gave me this death look. I thought he was going to kill me. He said, "You mean Palestine?" I said, "No, I mean Israel." He said, "You mean Palestine?" You know, you are in grave danger because I uttered the name Israel. There cannot be an Israel in Islam. Because as long as there is an Israel in Islam's way of thinking, Islam has failed. That's why the Islamic State is gaining so much traction in their efforts to establish a caliphate. Did you hear about what happened in Iraq this last week? It was taken away from them. Watch what's going to happen. Because see, every time they take land, it legitimizes the Islamic State and their caliphate and the possibility for Muslims to then swear allegiance to the Islamic State because of the caliphate. So every time the opposite happens and they lose land, it delegitimizes them, which is going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. Iran isn't just provoking the United States, they're also threatening Saudi Arabia. Yesterday, the Jerusalem Post reported that an Iranian cleric predicted the fall of the Saudi government over a Shiite cleric's execution. I don't know if you heard about this. You have to understand, Saudi Arabia is Sunni. They are Sunni Muslims. The House of Saud, Ibn Saud, Beit Saud, is a Sunni reign and monarchy. In Iran, they are Shiite Muslims, and they're enemies one of the other. Let me just share with you some of what the report had to say quickly. A prominent cleric with close links to Iran's ruling establishment denounced the execution on Saturday of a Saudi Shiite cleric and predicted the repercussions would bring down the Saudi ruling family. "I have no doubt that this pure blood will stain the collar of the House of Saud and wipe them from the pages of history." I'll add the pages of Bible prophecy, as I'll mention in a moment. Ayatollah Ahmed Khatami, a member of the Assembly of Experts, was quoted as saying by the Mehr news agency, "The crime of executing Sheikh Nimr is part of a criminal pattern by this treacherous family. The Islamic world, listen, is expected to cry out and denounce this infamous regime as much as it can," he added. And that's exactly what they're now beginning to do. According to Fox News, who also reported on this yesterday, had a piece titled, "Iran, Germany, and the Middle East Muslim Leaders Condemned Saudi Arabia's execution of the prominent Shiite cleric." Now, isn't that exciting? What do you mean? Well, for those of us who know Bible prophecy, this doesn't come as any surprise. In fact, if anything, it's what I call a sanctified excitement. And here's what I mean by a sanctified excitement. Those of us who are keenly aware of the prophecy in Ezekiel 38 and 39, know that this is exactly what's going to happen. Iran, Russia, an alliance of Muslim nations will launch a nuclear attack against Israel to take a spoil. But verse 13 of Ezekiel 38 is so interesting because it says that Sheba and Dedan and the young lions of Tarshish will only protest, asking, "Have you come to take a spoil?" In other words, they're not in this alliance that attacks Israel. They only protest this alliance that attacks Israel. Who's Sheba and Dedan? Sheba and Dedan is Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia. Who are the young lions of Tarshish? Some believe, we can't be certain, but some believe the young lions of Tarshish can be a vague reference to the United States of America as a young country that came from the English, the lion of England. And so we could be, that could be a reference to the United States. And if it is, then it would certainly explain why it is that the United States has been degraded, for lack of a better word, to only protesting this attack. And so too is Saudi Arabia protesting this attack. And we see now Iran and Russia et al., all against Saudi Arabia. And this very well could be Ezekiel 38 beginning to come to pass. I truly believe it is. I know there are others, and I respect them, that they're very cautious to say, hey, this is Ezekiel 38 beginning to come to pass. I could be wrong, but again, I would rather warn and have it not happen than not warn only to have it happen. Well, needless to say, this is kind of a morose update, isn't it? I can tell by the look on your faces. Not a very good outlook, is it? Not a very good outlook. Do you think that maybe God is wanting for us as his people to loosen our grip on this world? To ready us for the next? And does it not take a bad outlook? I like how one so aptly quipped, when the outlook is bad, try the uplook. I would suggest that that is exactly what God is trying to do. In and through this bad outlook, he's trying to get us to look up and lift up our heads because our redemption is drawing near. This is what Jesus said in Luke 21:28. When these things, keyword, begin to take place, stand up and lift up your heads because your redemption is drawing near. I'll add to this, not only stand up and look up, but you first need to wake up from your spiritual slumber, because this is the reality. This is what's happening. This is what's coming. Bear with me as I bring it in for a close. We're going to close the way we began concerning some Christians being blindsided. And this should the aforementioned bad outlook come to pass. I know I run the risk of an oversimplification, but here's the thing. The foundation upon which our lives are built will utterly determine whether or not we'll fall. And this is really, in a way, echoing what we just saw in 1 Corinthians 3. What foundation is your life built upon? Now, I'm speaking, of course, of the parable that Jesus taught, comparing the two builders, one who built on the sand and the other who built on the rock. It's in Matthew 7. I'll read verses 24 through 27, and we'll bring it to a close. Jesus is speaking, and he says, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash." Here's the bottom line. It's coming. It's coming. It's not if, it's when. And when it does, will you be able to stand? Is your foundation, is that which you have built on the rock, the solid rock of Jesus Christ, or is it on the shifting sand of this world?